I have Susan Kearns with me here. She's the executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival. It starts tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it starts tomorrow. Tomorrow's opening night.
Oh, you're cleaning the theaters out, getting the bubble gum out from the under the seats, and getting all that loose popcorn that was there, cleaning it out, getting all spiffy up for the big opening night at the Oriental and Downer Theaters. Two historic movie theaters in this country. I'm not just saying in Wisconsin. I'm talking the country. The Oriental built... Boy, I think it was built during the Depression or before the Depression. Very old and Downer, too, an historic movie theater. And you're lucky to get your hands on those places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're looking at celebrating 100 years of the Oriental in just a couple of years. So we'll have a big celebration around that. And the Downer Theater is the oldest operating movie theater, certainly in Milwaukee, but it might even be in all of Wisconsin at this point.
Yeah, and... WRJN also celebrating its 100th anniversary in 2 years, a year and a half, as a matter of fact. We've been 100 years as well.
What's that? Let's get together.
Yeah. Let's talk about the old days, 100 years ago, 1926. Okay, so the film festival starts today. What is the film festival? People just tuning in. What is it?
Yeah, so it's really a celebration of movies. Starting tomorrow night, we have over 2 weeks of all kinds of films from around the world, including a lot of films that were made within Milwaukee and the Kenosha area, the M7 region. Opening night, we have the documentary Sally, which is about Sally Ride, and this is directed by Christina Constantini, who grew up in Milwaukee, and she's now, you know, working all over the world, but just a terrific, terrific film, and it's something that, you know, it's not something that you're going to see at the multiplex, and so that's really what we're trying to do with the film festival is bring the best of films from around the world, documentaries, fiction films, horror films, subtitled films, you know, anything that you can think of, short films. We have a lot of great short programs. Bringing those to the big screen so that people can see those in that, you know, in our historic theaters and, you know, just kind of vibe with each other, too. Talk to people afterwards, go for a drink after, get dinner before, you know, make a whole night of it. Really embrace the movie-going experience.
You know, and I love theaters. I tell everybody everybody's got a superpower. My superpower is I can tell you every single movie I've seen my entire life and which theater I've seen it in.
Wow.
Isn't that a great superpower?
It's unbelievable. It's funny. I was talking to somebody recently and trying to figure out what was the first film I ever saw in a theater, and I truly can't remember because I remember my parents taking me to the movies a lot when I was a kid. So I have sort of glimpses of what I was seeing there, but I couldn't tell you which one was the first. That's so interesting.
I think my first one in the theater was Tammy and the Bachelor, and I was real tiny. But I remember going to the drive-in, and we saw Tammy and the Bachelor. I remember I can't believe my father actually did all this. We went to the New York Paramount on 43rd and Broadway. It's no longer there. And we saw Elvis Presley and Flaming Star. Now, my parents weren't big Elvis fans, but we schlepped the whole family into the Paramount, which was almost 5,000 seats, just short of Radio City Music Hall, big theater, to see Flaming Star with Elvis Presley. And those are the earlier films I remember.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Okay. Yeah. Now, how do you choose the movies? Because before we went on the air, I said it's like in high school or rather in grammar school when you were setting up teams for dodgeball. Pick me, pick me, pick me. Is it something like that when you get all these filmmakers together? Oh, pick me, pick me. Something like that?
Well, it's not exactly that physical, but but it is a really difficult process because we have literally thousands of films that come in, and you know they're all hoping for a spot in the film festival. Part of it is that we do want to make sure that we have a range, so it can get where it becomes very competitive is there might be a year where we have like two or three or even four films that are all great, but they're all about a similar subject, And so that might be a situation where we're like, okay, well, you know, these three films are great, but this film is, you know, equally as good. And it's, you know, it was made in Ireland and we don't have an Irish film yet. So we're going to grab this one, whereas these other three, like they're from countries that we already have represented. Or, you know, it might be that we have a couple of films and one is like a little bit more maybe like action oriented and we don't have really any other action films that we, you know, in the festival programmed yet. So we might grab that one. So we're really looking to, you know, do a breadth, but also a depth of programming. With the local films, it gets incredibly difficult because this year, for example, I think, I want to say that we had, five or six times as many films as we could program coming out of the M7 region. And so we have not quite 50 films that were made in Milwaukee, Kenosha, Racine, like those areas, but we could have programmed an entirely different set of films and still had plenty to choose from. There's just so much great filmmaking going on in Wisconsin right now. So it's kind of the wealth of, there's like a French term for the burden of plenty. You know, those choices become very difficult, especially when it's folks we know and folks who are doing great work, but it's the same kinds of considerations.
Do you get a lot of people bothering you leading up to the festival, kind of pushing their films on you? Much like radio stations used to have we called them record pluggers. They used to bother the program director day and night. Oh, I want you to put my song into the rotation. Do you get that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I think we don't mind it so much. The issue is just that we usually can't watch things that are just sort of sent to us. So a lot of times filmmakers will reach out and they're like, hey, I've got this film. It's, you know, it's only 10 minutes. Can you watch it? Or, hey, I've got this feature and it's a rough cut. Here's a cut. Can you watch it? And usually if it's not in the rotation of our actual programming duties, it's really hard for us to be able to sort of watch those films outside of that programming kind of the setup that we have for doing that, because it can be I think people aren't, like, until you've watched 100 films, you don't understand how, you know, people are like, oh, I want to watch movies for a living. And, you know, then you start doing it and it's, it can be very tiring and you want to make sure that you bring your fresh eyes to every film that you watch. So that's where it can get more difficult, I think.
Siskel and Ebert were being interviewed mm-hmm. once and everybody was saying to them, oh, this is a wonderful, they can see movies all day. He said, for every good movie, I got to sit through 4 terrible movies. And when they're 2 hours, you're spending your whole day waiting for this movie to end because it's so bad. He said, yeah, the good ones are great. I'd like to see The Godfather 3 times. But for every Godfather movie, there's some dog you got to see. And it just is terrible, he said, just to sit through these bad movies. Do you ever sit through a bad movie and you couldn't wait for it to be over?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny that you bring that up. I was, my first sort of film reviewer job, I was in college. I went to school at University of Texas in Austin. And this was when film reviewers, you know, we got the advanced tickets. So we went to the theaters and we had the little like light up pens and everything. It was an internship and I started my internship at the end of January, not really understanding the cycles Hollywood goes through, where a lot of times they put the films that they know are not going to be very good into like a February slot. And so the first month of my job there was going to just film after film after film that was, I mean, I'm not even going to name them. They've all mostly been forgotten, I think. But I was like, oh, this is not what I was expecting.
I know. It's awful when you got to sit through a bad movie. Especially when you have a date with you that loves the movie and you got to sit there and just roll your eyes.
Yeah, or you have to review it, and then you're, you know, you you're like, to, okay, yeah. Now what do I say about this?
You know,
Ebert had the, you know, the fact that everybody knew them and respected them, that's easier than, you know, man, this is my first review out, and I have to find something to say about, you know, about this film.
I only walked out of one movie. It was back in the 70s. I think it was North Dallas 40 with Mac Davis. I don't know if Burt Reynolds is in it. It was so bad, I actually got out of the theater and walked out, and people were looking at me. It was, I couldn't sit through it. I just, that's, you know, funny. And I paid my money. I sat through about 40 minutes of it. I said, I can't sit through this. And I walked out, and that's the only film I ever walked out on before. I just was so bad. At least that, you know, it made a lot of money, but wasn't my cup of tea. Now, what are filmmakers, now the people who submit these films, what are they hoping their end game is going to be with these movies? Because a lot of them will never make it to mainstream movie theaters. You won't be seeing them at the Marcus theaters. You won't be seeing them at wherever you see your movies, IMAX theaters. What's their end game with these movies?
Yeah, it really depends on the filmmaker and the film. So we actually do have a fair amount of people who will have their world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival. And some of those films do go on to having like full theatrical and, you know, DVD, Blu-ray distribution and getting onto a service like Netflix or, you know, Hulu. Some of them have theatrical runs. So some films do start with us and then they do really launch into, you know, into what we would think of, not necessarily, you know, they won't get the push that like an Avengers film will, but they do have a theatrical run, you know, around the United States and sometimes, you know, in different countries as well. Other films might be kind of wrapping up their festival run. And so we might get them just before they, you know, they show up on Netflix or Hulu or, you know, sometimes even PBS, wherever it is. And those, you know, it's really individual at this point because I do think that, you know, most people are hoping that they can use film festivals to launch their visibility as filmmakers and their film in general. So film festivals are a really good way to do that, to connect with audiences, to, you know, get press around your film that you can then leverage to grow your social media so that you can prove to distributors, like, hey, we've got an audience for this movie. I think one of the things, too, is that filmmakers who attend film festivals, like even, you know, showing up and just not just doing the Q&A, but going to like the networking events and things like that, you meet people from other areas of the country that you wouldn't necessarily meet or other areas of the world that you wouldn't necessarily meet. And you never know when those connections are going to come back to help you. So I've definitely met people at filmmakers at festivals, you know, just had like a beer with them or whatever. And it'll be a year or two later and they'll get in touch and be like, hey, I met you here. You know, I'm doing a job in this city. Do you happen to know anybody that X, Y, and Z? And so you can kind of keep those connections going in different ways. And you do start to run into the same people. It's very cool. It's like it becomes sort of a little family on the festival circuit.
You know, every once in a while, I'll hear about a movie that sounds good, but I never heard of it before. And case in point, about 4 years ago, Nomadland won the Academy Award for Best Picture of the Year. I never heard of it before. So I said to my wife, let's go see it. And we saw it, and we saw it 4 times. It was that good. But I never heard of it before. I just took a chance on it because this looks interesting. And it won Best Picture, so it can't be that bad. Although I take it back because what was that Asian film that won Best Picture about 2 years ago?
Oh, Parasite?
No, that was excellent. No, that was good.
I was like, I thought Parasite was great.
No, that was excellent. No, Parasite was good. It was the one after that. It was the one with Michelle Yeoh.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
10 minutes, I had to shut it off.
I love that movie.
I couldn't even sit through that for 10 more minutes. I said, this is awful. And so I closed. I said, how did this ever win Best Picture? The people I've spoken to about it, I haven't found one person, except for you now, that actually liked the movie. Now, that brings me to another point. These people put a lot of money into this, a lot of time and effort into these films.
Yeah.
Now, it's not like Disney spends $200 million on Snow White and makes about $40 million. Disney can take the loss on it and, you know, try to market it other ways. But when you put money into one of these films and it doesn't go anywhere, whoa, that's a financial hit.
Yeah. A lot of independent films are labors of love, and it really is. You know, some folks see them as a calling card. They want to make this film, you know, because they want to establish themselves as. Sometimes it's even, you know, I need to get a feature under my belt so that I can establish myself as a commercial director, or I can get an agent, or, you know, whatever it is. But I think one of the things I really like about, you know, working for a film festival is that you can honor that work. And I do think that one of the difficult things about film is that, you know, every film is compared to, I'll say, the Avengers again, because that's not exactly a one-to-one, but, you know, what we're used to seeing are the really high-budget Hollywood films. So you go to an independent film, and it's going to be a little bit rougher around the edges, and it's not going to be as slick. And you hope that the story and, you know, the world that it's pulling you into gives you an experience that's equally as rich, because, you know, I don't think everybody wants, like, the slick Hollywood films all the time, but they do have a rhythm and a cadence to it that makes them very, very easy to watch. And so I just hope people give you know, the range of films a chance, because these are people's dreams on screen. Like, every film starts with a dream. So I think it's cool that we get to honor that.
So true, because you got to start somewhere. Even I started as a janitor at a radio station when I was 18 years old. Everybody's got to start somewhere and get a resume built, and then you get bigger and bigger and bigger. Even Steven Spielberg, you know what his first movie was? He filmed his own bar mitzvah. You got to start somewhere. And that's great. You're giving people a chance. Real quickly, what do you think about this? The new rules at the Academy Awards now. You have to watch every single Oscar-nominated film in the category you're voting in. I can't believe they didn't watch them before. How could you vote on something where you didn't watch it? That just sounds ludicrous. I heard this rule yesterday. You think it's a good rule? You got to watch every film before you can vote on them?
I mean, ideally, yes. People are watching all of the films before they're voting. that's what we would
hope
for.
You would think, yeah. You would think.
I do think it's going to be pretty hard to enforce. You know, I don't know how... I don't know how they're going to enforce that. But I think the reminder that, you know, this isn't just about, like, PR campaigns and this and that is probably not a bad one.
And what do you think about the other rule now? AI, you know, AI, like, they changed Robert De Niro's voice for a recent movie. They did the same thing with The Brutalist. They changed, I forget the lead actor, he won the Academy Award. Adrian Brody. They changed his voice with AI. And the Academy says, AI is fine. That's it. You can do it. That sounds kind of weird that, no, you could change the performance, you know, digitally, and you could vote on it for best actor, actress, or picture. Wow.
Yeah, I think with AI, I think there's just so much to work out that it seems very different to me that, you know, like some of the things that as I understand it with The Brutalist that they were doing was more about accents. And so it wasn't like they were taking whole swaths of, like, you know, a whole monologue and changing it, but it was sort of like working with details about accents and things like that. I could be wrong, but there's a lot of that technological tweaking that's already been happening, and people just weren't talking about it in the same way. You know, you think about, like, I don't know, there have been films that have won for cinematography that have been almost entirely, not entirely, but, you know, a lot of, like, computer-generated work has gone into it, and yet they'll win for, like, cinematography. And so you think about those kinds of relationships, it's not all that different, but I think the industry's talking about it differently, and I'm glad the industry's talking about it, because I do think that we're at a moment where people just don't want everyone to take advantage of AI to totally replace actors, for example, or writers. You know, you can computer generate a screenplay in about, you know, 2 minutes. It's not going to be any good, but you could do it. And so just, you know, how do we make sure that we're still getting human voices on screen and, you know, hearing human stories, that kind of thing.
I didn't think about that, generating a screenplay. Wow. Okay, so if people want to go to the Milwaukee Film Festival, it kicks off tomorrow, runs for 15 days, is it, through May 8th? Am I right? May
8th?
Okay.
May 8th.
If you go to, mkefilm.org, am I right? Mkefilm.org.
Yep, mkefilm.org, and you'll see the beautiful bird art on the homepage. You can click on that, and that's going to take you to all things film festival. You can look at the individual films, buy individual tickets. We also have networking events. If there are aspiring filmmakers out there or people in the industry that want to get connected, those are free for anybody to attend. We have a bunch of panels. We're going to have have you heard of the film Hundreds of Beavers?
Okay. No, but go ahead.
it's a Milwaukee-made film and Wisconsin-made film. Actually, they shot up north. It's been sweeping it's kind of the indie darling right now. They've made over $1 million distributing, and they're releasing a case study to talk about how they did it. So that's, I think, going to be a really big event. Panels and networking and lots and lots of films.
What do I know? I wouldn't have invested one penny in a Minecraft movie, and that thing's made almost $400 million in 4 weeks. I wouldn't have put a penny into that film. Look at it. So what do I know? Okay, this is great, Susan. Susan Kearns, the executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival, kicks off tomorrow at the historic Oriental and Downer Theaters. Check out mkefilm.org for prices, all the movies, where to go, how to do it, and where to get your popcorn, okay?